Hi, this is ESPN's Dave Lamont, and you're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome into the Sports Objective as we're here live on a Sunday. If you're streaming with us right now, and we've got a great show with us, the man Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you?
What's going on, Dave? Just trying to recover from last night. Still went to Raleigh to Red Hat to see Whiskey Myers in concert. About a 2.5 hour lightning delay, reminiscent of the Super Regionals. But the concert got in minus one of the opening acts. Good show. It rained on us most of the show, but that was all right. You don't mind the rain so much when it's hot out. Since the lightning went away, but still recovering from that, but doing well.
So did Whiskey Myers win?
Well, it was a concert, not a game. But Whiskey Myers is always winners in my book. Love the modern Southern rock. Not many people doing it anymore.
I love it. Hey, Bubba Rose, what's up, man?
Oh, it's pretty, speaking of rain, a nasty day here north of Charlotte. And like Coach Mack said, though, can't really complain because of this rain that we've needed for quite some time.
No doubt about it. And Coach Mack McCarthy, author, he's the man, a living legend. How are you, Coach? Good to have you back.
Good. I appreciate the introduction. Even if none of it was true, I appreciate it. It's always good to be on here. We have a good time, and I'm looking forward to today.
I'm not lying. I could have called Kyle a gentleman, but I didn't. So
I can be a gentleman if the situation arises.
I like to get Kyle started up. That's this kinder, gentler Kyle right now is I like to get him all fired up, and that helps with the ratings, Coach.
I like the off the air Kyle.
Yeah.
That off the air Kyle has been on the air a few times, Coach. It's kind of how I ended up here doing this thing. Some of my antics on pirate radio through the years. But I try to keep that Kyle in check as much as I can, or we might not get too many guests on the show anymore from the university. So
turn it loose.
That's what Kyle unleash. Coach, wanted to have you on. Lots going on since we last talked. It's hard to believe that it hasn't been that long ago, but how things can change on a dime when it comes to college athletics just a week or two ago. Before I forget, your alma mater will be Virginia Tech. I'm just curious about the ACC. On one hand, you see the ACC with the grant of rights, this ironclad. Then you're hearing that a whole bunch of teams may be leaving. And then I'm thinking about your alma mater, like Virginia Tech and great schools like that. Where would they stay in the ACC? Would they not? One day it looks like the ACC is stable and the next they're not. So I wanted to get your reaction on that.
Yeah, I think there's a whole bunch of talk out there, and everybody has us going to two super leagues, and we're going to have relegation, and everybody else is going to be rendered irrelevant. I'm not sure all that's going to happen. I've got a whole lot of opinions on how we got here and where we might go, but I don't think things are going to be quite as crazy as people think. We got a million to get into, but one thing that keeps me thinking that's going to be a little saner than people think is one of the big complaints among leagues right now, every league, whether it's the American or whether it's the SEC or what league it is that you don't play the other teams in your league. Well, how's that going to get better if you add if you go to 18 or 20 or 24 or whatever, that, I mean, you're never going to play. You're never going to have those kind of rivals. The only rivalries will be maybe your main rival, and then maybe if you're good, the other good teams in the league might become rivals. But I don't think it's going to go quite the way people think. And my big complaint about all this, I'd be interested in see how you all feel. The big complaint I have about all this is – everybody's looking out for their own best interest. That's what they get paid to do. That's fine. The ADs and presidents are looking out for their institution. The commissioners are looking out for their leagues. The television partners are looking out for their network. Who is looking out for college athletics, college football in particular? Who's looking out for that? What's the best thing for college football and college athletics? And we have a void. We have a void. And as long as we let these people who are only interested in helping themselves run things, you're going to get some of this stuff. But I don't think it's going where people think it's going, at least right now, because you think scheduling 12 or 14 or 16 is going to be hard? You go crazy with 20 or 24 in a league. You don't have leagues anymore. That's just professional sports. And maybe we end up there one day. I don't think while we're doing this show, we're going to end up there.
I hope it happens, because here's why. I think it'll fail. I think if they go to 40 and 48 is the two numbers I keep seeing. You know, to a 20-team Big Ten or in a 20-team SEC, or a 24-team Big Ten and a 24-team SEC. So that leaves a lot of people out. So that puts East Carolina into some good company. Quite frankly, East Carolina would be better off, because there might be a Virginia Tech. There'd probably be a Wake Forest. There'd be a, you know, pick a school, you know, a Kansas State, somebody like that. There's going to be plenty of teams left out if that were to happen. And so we'd be in good company if there was only 40 or 48 at the highest level. I also think it would fail, because here's why. If people want to watch the NFL, they'll watch the freaking NFL. And that's what you would have with that. And I think initially it would get a lot of hype, a lot of pub. This is the highest level of college football. But then when you are taking away a whole bunch of people that are no longer now part of that level, you're losing part of your fan base. It ain't all Alabama and Auburn fans that watch the Alabama-Auburn game. It's East Carolina fans. It's North Carolina fans. It's Georgia fans. It's Louisiana Monroe fans. Well, now if we're no longer part of that level, I'm not watching Alabama and Auburn play. Screw them. I'm going to be watching East Carolina and Temple play or whatever. So I'd like to see it happen for two reasons. If it is 40 to 48. If it's higher than that, then no. If it's like 60, no, because you know what will happen from East Carolina's perspective. But if it's 40 or 48, I think it would put us in some good company with who's left. And then I'd like to go see that model fail. I'd like to see that model fail. And after about 5 to 10 years, things go back to the way it was.
Well, the only thing that really matters about the two leagues, three leagues, four leagues, five leagues, the only thing that matters about that is access to the playoff. If the Big Ten and the SEC say we're having our own playoff, then that does damage everybody else in the country. But I'm not so sure that the powers that be will ultimately do that. And make no mistake about it, ESPN and Fox are making all these decisions. Greg Sankey ain't making this decision. Warren isn't making this decision. Phillips isn't making this decision. Those guys are not making these decisions. Fox and ESPN are making these decisions. And I think it was Mike Martin, the chancellor or president of LSU in 2011, said pretty soon we're going to have the ESPN league versus the Fox league. And really, that is what it looks like.
Yeah.
But back to your thing, Kyle, back to your point, is if we stay the way we are, or even if they go to 20 or 24, as long as you have access to the playoff, what's the difference between that and what's happening right now?
Exactly. And another thing is with Coach, when you have the commissioner of the Pac-12 and you have Jim Phillips, you know, what those guys should have back in January, we had the perfect scenario for them to have an automatic bid every year for the playoff. And they turned it down because they were bitter with the Big Ten and the SEC.
Yeah, and it would have given the Group of Five one automatic bid also.
Yeah. And that was the perfect scenario to go to 12 and you have, you know, the Group of Five has one. At least we would have one, and you would have the other five conferences. So And then you'd have the at large. So you'd have like six at large. So they would get some more of theirs. It was a perfect. Yep. I thought it was at least it's a lot better. I'll put it to you like this. It's a lot better than what we have right now. And it's a baby step in the right direction. That's not what I want. But Cal and I've talked about this before. And Bubba, we would rather have that than for us to be outside looking in. And you make a great point, Coach. We need a commit. If we've ever needed a commissioner in the different sports, football is desperate for one. With so many different topics we can talk about today. But with this particular case with the playoff is concerned, if you're the college football brand, if you will, they could grow this brand big time by you and I are basketball guys, Coach, and look at the March Madness every year. When you see the small schools all of a sudden that the mid-majors, we call it in basketball, and they upset people and all of a sudden they make a deep run, a Cinderella team. We love that. And I don't understand, you could actually make more money by including more people. It gives more inventory for ESPN, Fox, whomever, to have it. And I'll tell you another thing, you look at for Apple and Amazon, they're looking for more. Everybody's looking for more content. So, you know, I don't buy this whole, I hate the argument from college football elites who say that it'll damage the regular season. If I know that.
Oh, that's not a true argument. That's just some bullcrap they say.
I know that because if I know that if East Carolina is playing Temple and those two teams are fighting for a conference championship slot in say the East or whatever, then I'm going to watch that game because I go not only East Carolina, but this has significant ramifications on the playoff. You know, if my team has a chance to really get in the playoff, and that's the thing that I'm frustrated about is that they could make even more money than they're making right now. They're talking about dividing the pie. Not necessarily. I think they can make more money and still be elitist and still grow their brand. And this way that they're going, Coach, you make a great point. It's going back to the days I was thinking about this yesterday, the very fact that you remember, Coach, with the days of having like just a few game college football games. If we're not, I know we're not that way, but as far as the mindset, I care more about college football now since the 90s when there was more games than I did when I was a little kid because back then there was more basketball games on the football games.
Yeah. And I don't think the whole argument against the 12 was based in real good, you know, reasoning, if you will, like Kyle mentioned, you know, some of that, it doesn't really make any sense, but it was to say, whoa, you know, Sankey did us dirty here. He wants to expand the playoff. We're on board. And now he jumps out there and gets two more teams that gives them more chances to get in the playoffs. And everybody got their feelings hurt about that. And maybe rightfully so. And there are some concerns. How many games is too many? Because you're not giving away any regular season games because people are making those. They're making so much money.
How many games is too many, Coach? I have to cut you off. I don't know. I mean, the FCS, Division II, Division III does it. So, I mean, and they play the same amount of regular season games, if I'm not mistaken. So, I don't buy that argument.
And we have to wait. And we have to – no, I mean, and we have to wait to – there's a lot of times when we have to wait for now the playoff. There's several weeks that you have to wait. I say give the kids off the exam week, you know, right after the championship. Tell everybody you got to have your exams the week after championship, you know, the game. And after that, you have 3 or 4 weeks, however many teams you have.
If it's a 12-team playoff, you to me, if you want to do anything, I would maybe just move the start of the regular season up by a week just to try to do things more good. Keep things in the traditional time of around New Year's and Christmas. Start the regular season the week before Labor Day, week zero. Have that be week one now, and then have your conference championship game Thanksgiving week, and that gives you a little more time to get your playoff games in. So I think that would probably be an easy fix, but they could easily go to 12 if they wanted to for the playoffs. I think you're right, Coach. There was a lot of people that made that decision not to based on having their feelings hurt. And I don't see where it helped anything. And it hurt the Pac-12. And another thing, as we're talking about conference realignment, I'm going to tell you, if any administrators at Colorado, Arizona State, Utah happen to be watching, if the Pac-12, if Washington and Oregon and Stanford, okay, if Washington and Oregon to Stanford are sitting here in the Pac-12 and they're saying, guys, let's don't expand the Pac-12 right now. Let's just hold tight. Go to the Big 12 as fast as you can, because that means Oregon and Washington are going to leave for the Big 10 at some point. If they don't have an urgency to expand the Pac-12 to try to poach from the Big 12, if possible, or if not the Mountain West, then that means that Oregon and Washington are looking to go to the Big 10, and or Arizona State, and the other two, get out of there, go to the Big 12. I'm telling you, I've seen it before. The Big 12 weren't interested in expanding past where they were, and it was all because of Texas and Oklahoma, and look what they did. So right now, if those Pac-12 schools that are considering going to the Big 12, if the other Pac-12 schools, primarily Oregon and Washington, aren't interested in expanding, I'd leave for the Big 12 as fast as I could, because I think that kind of it says their mind isn't on trying to do what's best for the Pac-12. The Pac-12 needs to go ahead and move, I think, on expansion. They need to protect themselves, in my opinion. And yeah, you know, I've heard, Coach, have you heard about that? There was talk of a Pac-12 Big 12 merger. I think egos will keep that from happening. But I've been reading something about a working relationship between the Pac-12 and the ACC, perhaps combining the two television networks to give coast-to-coast coverage, ACC and the Pac-12 network, and sharing of media rights money. Do you think that could happen?
I don't know. I don't know that the dollars actually work, but it makes some sense, and you do have some quality schools out there. But I'm not sure that works. The wider you get, the more difficult the logistics are. But yeah, if it's a television arrangement, if ESPN says we want this, then we'll do it. And if they say, you know, it didn't go, we can't pay you anymore, then why do it? The thing about the ACC is they have the second, they're the second best property ESPN has.
Right.
And that's valuable. There is a value in that. And yes, in hindsight, it was a low ball deal and it was extended too long. Everybody else did short-term deals and they were able to renegotiate. But at the time Swofford signed that deal, you know, this hindsight's really, really good. But at that time he signed it, it was the biggest television deal ever. And you know, nobody remembers that. They just remember, oh, now it's a bad deal. And it is a bad deal. And it was short-sighted or too long-sighted or however you want to put it. But I'm not sure that those folks bring enough money to the table. And, you know, I've heard them mention maybe a championship game, a football championship.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Now, that's something that might move the needle in terms of – but then what do you do with your access to the playoffs? Are your two leagues only getting one team in unless you get it large? There are a lot of moving parts here, but I just don't think things are going to move the way people think they are.
I think in the current scenario, Coach, with the 4-team playoff and no automatic bids, you may increase your chances of getting a playoff team, because the winner of the Pac-12 versus ACC game would probably get a spot every year, whereas, you know, sometimes those two leagues miss the playoffs now. Now, if you go to automatic bids and explain the playoffs, then no, it's not a good thing for either league.
But I don't think there are any no votes on the 12-team playoff after last week.
if it comes up again, I wonder when that'll come up again.
I think real soon.
Yeah,
I hope so. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, and I think there's no reason ESPN is going to take away the AC, dismantle the ACC. Another thing is, you're going back to your point with Swofford. If you remember, there was a reason why the long-term grant of rights is because of exactly what we're talking about right now, Coach. It's like Back to the Future. When you have Clemson and Florida State, they were worried about those couple schools and who knows who else, but they wanted to keep the ironclad, if you will, on the conference. And I think Swofford did a good job on that. And yeah, the low ball figure, but at the time, like you said, plus it gave stability for the league, and you threw in Notre Dame, which that's what I was going to add to the conversation, guys, is Notre Dame does not have to do anything. And I think that they, what they're going to do until they're told they're not going to be in the playoff if they stay independent, that's the key. That's the key ingredient right there. If they're, because Oregon and Washington are begging, I mean, Phil Knight, I'm not anti-Phil Knight. I think he's very cool and I love Nike, but he's even now cold calling like a telemarketer all the leagues, which I don't blame Oregon for doing
that. He's calling the Big Ten, and I don't blame him at all.
No, and the Big 12 too. He's called both leagues, which, I mean, I'm not saying that he's doing the wrong thing, but I'm
well,
just saying.
Well, I mean, the Big 12 the Big 12 would take Oregon. I mean, that's interesting. That would be more along the lines of a merger. If Oregon and Washington come too with those other four, that's a merger. I don't blame Phil Knight at all for reaching out on behalf of Oregon. Phil Knight carries a lot of cachet. A lot of those a lot of those schools are wearing Nike uniforms, baby.
No, I'm not saying I disagree with him doing it. I'm just saying it's come to that point where they're worried, but
Oregon's got nothing to worry about.
But it comes down, I know, but what I'm saying is there's no reason really to panic, because the reality is they have two choices: stay in the Pac-12 or they can be in the Big 12, because Notre Dame is not going to. Why in the world would Notre Dame, they've had the many years of history with being independent, that's what their donors want. And until, like I said, like Coach makes a great point, I was worried about all the uncertainty of the different leagues and everything, but Notre Dame is the key fish, the one thing right now, and if they don't move.
Coach, if you were the ACC commissioner at this point, would you tell Notre Dame either join in football or take the rest of your sports and go take them somewhere else? They can go play with the other Catholic schools in the Big East, because I sure would.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they still bring some value. I don't know what value, literally dollar figure that they bring, but they still bring some value with the scheduling agreement, with the five league games that they give. In an ideal world, Notre Dame and West Virginia would be in the ACC.
And then, well, West Virginia would come to the ACC in a heartbeat if they thought they were good enough academically. But
and going back to the ACC too, Coach, the whole issue with academics and putting down West Virginia makes perfect sense to be in the ACC for many reasons. And geographically, when you look at rivalries, the travel, you look like, for example, your alma mater, Virginia Tech, and West Virginia, you've got – and another one, if those schools do leave, like the North Carolina, the Dukes of the world, why not put an East Carolina?
Coach, I got another, we're talking about the ACC. I read this. I don't know if it's true. I read something about the grant of rights agreement. Not only is the exit fee, whatever, $50 million or whatever it is because of grant of rights and through 2035. Is that right? And I also read that you forfeit.
Yes, 14 years right now.
So you would forfeit your money from the conference you go to for the remainder of the ACC TV contract. I don't think that's enforceable. No. And I know it's written up, on the agreement. I don't think it's enforceable, because once I paid my exit fee and I left my league, I don't see how it holds up in a court of law that you can tell me what I can do with my money going forward. I just don't think that's enforceable. I'm not a lawyer.
They signed it. I didn't have to sign it.
Well, you can sign stuff, and it still ain't going to hold up in the court of law. Do you think that would hold up, Coach?
I don't. I think they could enforce their end of it, maybe. But even that would be questionable. How many of these things have been tried to be enforced? Whether it's leaving early or that kind of thing. I mean, they've all been negotiated down.
Yeah,
and this would be too. And that brings up another point for you guys to kick around here. How many teams that have left the league and joined another league have done well? Start naming.
That's a good question. I'd have to think about that. Utah from the Mountain West.
Utah is the best example.
They've done great.
No, Nebraska, no. With Texas A&M, no. Missouri, no. Nebraska, obviously, is the worst one.
Well, Missouri did well initially in the SEC.
They did play in the championship game 2 years. Right. But they have won. They've been in the league.
Who are we missing, Coach? Who's the one?
What's that?
Who's the one we're missing?
Oh, no. I don't know who. Oh. I don't know who. I mean, TCU, you could argue a little bit. Yeah. But I'm telling you that if you go back and look, about 90% of these moves have not been good moves for the school.
Well, TCU had to do it.
Say it again.
TCU had to do it. You can't turn down the Big 12.
They had to do it, and Virginia Tech had to do it, and it initially worked. They won 4 of the first 7 titles in football, and they've won in other sports. But Miami, it hasn't worked for Miami. Certainly hasn't worked for Syracuse. Certainly hasn't worked for BC, although they did play for a couple titles for early on.
Pitt's kind of been Pitt. They've kind of stayed status quo.
Johnny said Pitt decent at football, and they played for the – championship this past year.
Yeah, but you know, Pitt was always decent in football in the Big East. They kind of stayed status quo. It didn't hurt them or help them. I think they've just kind of stayed where they are.
But the point, not many of them have gone on into that league and just had great success other than financially.
Yeah. West Virginia is one that's been terrible for them, but what else were they going to do? I mean, you know, were they going to stay in the American and lose "quote unquote BCS or Power Five status, the Big East became the American. They couldn't do that, so the Big 12 was the only lifeline out there for them, and it's been a terrible fit. They've done terrible in the Big 12. You know, I think maybe it looked like it was getting a little better for them geographically with that in Cincinnati and UCF. Now, if all these, you know, and that's another thing. But let's say they do take 4 Pac 12 schools from the Pac 12, and the Big 12 goes to 16. Do they add 2 more to go to 18 on the East Coast? You know, do they add a Memphis and, you know, I'd love it to be Memphis and East Carolina, but it would probably be Memphis and South Florida.
Well, that, Coach, I know we could talk a lot, but we had some other topics to talk about. And one of the sports, I think you know basketball pretty well. So I wanted to shift gears a little bit because Kyle
and I. There's some people that would question that, but yeah, okay.
I'm definitely not going to question that, Coach. That's why we like to have you on for life and sports. And then, of course, with basketball, I just want to get your feelings, Coach, about Coach Swartz coming in first year with East Carolina. You're part of that fraternity of East Carolina basketball and how tough it is. Just want to get your feelings on him early on.
What a fraternity that is.
We would live in the Animal House building. There's no question about that. If we actually had a fraternity, we would live in that building with all the trash around it. All that stuff. I still haven't met Coach Forts. I've been over there a few times. I have met Coach Morton, Jake Morton, and Nick Mattson, and Riley Davis. All really good guys. And again, the folks I know in the, you know, we talked a little bit about this, but the folks I know that know Coach Swartz really like him. And of course, the fact that he was with Rick Barnes gives me hope, because Rick Barnes does things from the ground up and is a big picture guy, looks at every phase of the program. And I would think he you know, he'll do a good job if they give him the resources, like we've talked about on this show multiple times.
Exactly. That's the key right there, Coach. We can talk for hours on the show, as we have collectively, but even if we did a show for several hours today, which we're not.
But Coach Mack already said he wasn't going to do that.
I know. If I walk away, the race started.
That's right. But that very thing with Coach, we want Coach to be successful just like we wanted you to be successful. If it has ECU on it, I want it to be successful. But this particular case with basketball, it just is so frustrating to see that people aren't valuing basketball the way they should. And if we had the right mindset, we would see basketball has the potential. It is the number 2 sport, revenue sport. There's no question behind that. With basketball being number 2, football being number 1, maybe you could argue that baseball breaks even.
Well, it's the number 2 revenue sport because of our television contract.
Yeah. But what do you think about that very thing? There's a lot of things that we've talked about in the past that we can do, and we're hoping that Coach is successful and that he gets the resources. Are there any things you've come up with since that maybe more things we could do to add more revenue to basketball?
You know, I've thought about this a lot, obviously. I thought about it a lot when I was the coach. I've thought about it a lot you know, because it isn't like good folks haven't come through here. It isn't like that that the Pirate fans aren't capable of supporting the program. But I think one thing I look at this program like, and I know it's SEC, but it's sort of like Auburn when we got there, and it's sort of like Virginia Tech in some ways, in that it's certainly football first. It's certainly a sort of a remote location in you know, as much as a place can be remote in this time, this day and age, but not a destination for basketball necessarily. When Virginia Tech succeeds and when Auburn has success, it's because of a unique personality. Three coaches have won at Auburn. Sonny Smith, great personality. Cliff Ellis, unique, quirky guy. And Bruce Pearl, you know, a promoter. And you can argue the same thing at Virginia Tech a little bit too. Back when Charlie Moyer was there, a real successful Division II coach, local guy, but had a little flair to him, played with some flair on offense. Buzz Williams, really a unique guy, but a big promoter. Mike Young has come in and kind of continued to build on what he did. And, of course, Mike Young has just an incredible record, you know, built in the Southern Conference, but still an incredible record. You know, that might be the one thing that hasn't gotten done, you know, from me to certainly to Jeff, to Joe, maybe the promotion and marketing part of the coaching staff is one thing that hasn't really happened in a big way.
I've said something similar, Coach, that what I thought East Carolina needed, and I hope Coach Schwartz succeeds, and I like Dooley, but I've said what I thought Pirate basketball needed from a personality standpoint is somebody who's young, fiery, kind of like Bill Herrien was, but Southern, like a young, fiery Southerner that I think, you know, that they could get out there and kind of talk and give lip service and get the fan base fired up. I could see that really working at East Carolina.
Yeah, those are good points. Yeah, they really are.
Hey, Coach, we have somebody you know is chiming in. Former East Carolina player, Tony Parham. He says, hey guys, Coach Mack, my guy, how are you?
Hey, we can end this discussion. What we do need is more Tony Parhams.
Yeah, he's saying exactly. Young, energetic, and knows the area.
Play. He could probably still play.
Yeah, I think for us right now, though, the fact the fan base, how about the students buying pizzas? We were even going to like buy pizzas ourselves and give them to the students to get them there, you know, like for there's big games they should be camping out for. But I think when I was there, it was more like an event, even for basketball and baseball, like for football on a Saturday, or if even it was a Thursday night. When those ESPN contracts, when that was really a big deal, we were going to those games. If it was basketball, especially the big matchups, your students like us, we were there. And for baseball, too.
Coach, I had talking about creative ideas for basketball. I got two things to point out here. I've had an idea for years for basketball to kind of put a spotlight on East Carolina and the other non-ACC schools in North Carolina. I've often thought about a early season tournament. You could rotate where it was hosted, Greenville, Boone, Wilmington, you know, that featured East Carolina, App State, you know, Wilmington, maybe Davidson if they wanted to participate. Just the schools that have large alumni that aren't part of the ACC in North Carolina, and kind of do a preseason tournament with only those schools and rotate it between the universities to host it. I think something like that could be a lot of fun and create some excitement for ECU basketball.
It really is. You know, Virginia used to have a thing. I'm not even sure what they called it, but they did a doubleheader, and they would do it in Richmond. They do it in Roanoke. And like Virginia, like North Carolina, has about 20 Division I schools now. And you know, just have a different four every year if all the schools would commit to it. And if you could get one of the big schools to commit to it each year, that would be awesome. But even if you didn't, like you said, if it's App and Charlotte and Wilmington and Campbell, who whoever it is and move it around. I think that would be a great way to kick off the season. And let me tell you one crazy idea I had for the for helping you know, ticket sales plus enthusiasm is, and I tried to get this done at Chattanooga, but we were winning enough that we were drawing pretty well anyway. I still thought this would have been a good idea. Sell or have a raffle for each of the home games with all the civic clubs in town. The Lions Club, they draw the Memphis game or the, you know, whoever it is, and they're in charge of selling tickets for that game. And you give them a percentage of the ticket sales as a fundraiser for them, and it's a win-win for everybody.
That's not a bad idea. That's a great idea. Yeah, that's old school. That seems like something you would have seen done back in the 80s.
Hey, whatever it takes, man.
It's a minor league baseball thing, right?
Yeah. Wrestling. Professional wrestling comes to mind.
Exactly.
Hey, Coach, I work with one of the assistant coaches for a local high school in Greenville, and he brought up a great point, and I wanted to ask you if legally, if it's a – maybe you would know college-wise, but he was asking, you know how we have the holiday tournaments? He was wondering if East Carolina could host – since there's a lot of great basketball programs in Eastern North Carolina, if you could have like 8 teams from, you know, Eastern North Carolina that they could host, maybe a Farmville Central, and you throw in.
I think so, but I don't think the university could. I think the university could let somebody else host it at our facility. Is that right, Coach?
Yeah, pretty much. As long as they don't give them a break on the price, if they charge the same thing they would charge anybody, they could do that.
So, in other words, if a promoter does a holiday tournament and you have that, it would have to be, they rent out the facility from ECU. Is that how they would have to do it? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll tell them that. So I was wondering.
Get those people in the building.
Yeah, exactly. And it gives exposure to those kids, you know, playing in that building. And maybe you get one or two that gains interest in the program because of that. Coach, I got an interesting question for you about Pirate basketball and somewhat controversial question, and I don't know how you're going to react to it. It's not that controversial. Do you think our baseball program hurts our basketball program?
No.
Okay. Simple answer.
I think it helps.
I didn't know if the focus and the love the East Carolina fans have for baseball kind of takes away from basketball.
No, my point would be exactly, Coach. My point would be the support is there for the fan base. In other words, when you have East Carolina winning, like we did in the CIT runs of 13 and 14, that place was packed. I know, Coach, when we brought in your era, we had NC State, that place was electric that night. And congratulations on beating the Wolfpack, by the way. That's one of my favorite wins there at in the history of Williams Arena, Menchie's Coliseum. But that place is electric. And the great thing about it, you know, it's tough when you have a Coach Houston, you get to put 51,000 in there for Dowdy Ficklin. But for basketball, even if you have 4,000, 3,000, if we've seen some of the Charlotte different rivalry games or in-state rivalry games when they come in, man, that place is loud even when it's half full, Coach.
Clearly, there's a core of folks that's bigger for baseball at this point in time, and Greenville's a baseball town, which is a great thing. But anytime the folks get used to coming over there, that's a good thing. Yeah. And there's some folks that are baseball fans and are not interested in basketball, and there are folks that are basketball fans not interested in baseball. But that's the great thing about a college town is that everybody in this town pretty much depends on the school for either the way they make a living or for some of their social life, for their entertainment. And I think that's one thing that just bugs the crap out of me, why we can't get a consistently good crowd for everything.
And I got another I'm just thinking of stuff off the top of my head here, and it's a topic that came up here, and it kind of goes back to conference realignment, but this is going to be directly about basketball. We're in the American's changing again. We're losing a lot of cachet in basketball. You do still have Memphis and Temple, SMU. Charlotte's coming in, which I hate, but I don't mind it in basketball. I just hate it in football. There's been some talk in the past about if the American loses any more teams, SMU, Memphis, for example, or when the current television contract goes away, that there's going to be a lot of money lost. We're going to go from $7 million per school for the TV deal around $3 million. There's a lot of talk about at that point, is it better for East Carolina to join the Sun Belt and play at a more regional conference with App State, Marshall now in the Sun Belt, our former rival Southern Miss, not so much regional, but we have a rivalry with them. JMU, Coastal Carolina, program on the rise, Georgia State, Georgia Southern. How do you think that would draw in basketball? I mean, I know it's not a great basketball league. It's not a terrible basketball league, but it's not what it is in football and baseball. But Sun Belt's a hell of a baseball league, and it's a good football league now. But how do you think that that would draw versus the American playing a very regional conference, somewhat reminiscent of the CAA, but at least there would be some carryover with football rivalries? Having Appalachian State, Coastal Carolina, James Madison, Old Dominion, Georgia State, Georgia Southern, all regional schools coming in here on a regular basis. How do you think that would play at ECU?
Number one, wouldn't hurt it at all. Number two, would give you a better chance to win games.
Okay. So you like it?
I do. I don't know that we'd ever take a quote-unquote step backwards, but it makes a lot of sense.
I don't think at that point that if we lose two more teams, we'd be in the American. And with the schools joining the American now, I think in the near future it wouldn't be perceived as a step backward. I think it would be perceived as a lateral move, and a lateral move that would give us more regional rivals.
Can you imagine? I mean, you could travel to JMU, you could travel to App, you could travel to Old Dominion, you could travel to Coastal, you could travel to Georgia Southern, Georia State. It probably makes
Marshall
sense to do.
Marshall. Hey, Coach, I have no problems with the teams. I love the teams. Like Jerry Maguire, show me the money. I want to see the money for that contract from the Sun Belt.
Their television contract right now, Dave, is worth around $2.5 million per team. Right. The American, the incumbent members right now is $7 million. The members coming in is $3 million. So if we all go down to $3 million, that'll be $1 million difference. We would make it up on travel costs and ticket sales, because I can guarantee you in football, we would sell more tickets in that league than we would in football in the new American. Because you're going to have App State, James Madison, who are fanatical about football, sending fans down here.
Old Dominion brings fans.
Yeah, Old Dominion does bring fans. Yes, they do. So,
no, I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with the teams in that league. It's a matter of what I'm worried about is it's a big pay cut. If they do get
well, we wouldn't do it unless the TV contract goes down. That's when we would do it, Dave. So you ain't got to worry about that. If the TV contract stays at $5 to $7 million and the Sun Belt stays at $2.5 million, then we're not going anywhere. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think the TV contract, when it gets renegotiated, particularly if we lose Memphis and SMU, I think the TV contract's going to go down dramatically.
Like you said, the travel thing is a big, big line item too, because you're not talking about just football.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you're going to save a lot of money on travel with Olympic sports.
And they're going to end up going in an East and West division, at least in terms of playing each other, they are.
Yes, absolutely. If they don't, it'd be completely idiotic. And the same with the American. That is one thing I'll point out about the new American. It's 14 teams. If the 14 teams stay together, it is, if we go divisions, you're going to have a division with East Carolina, Charlotte, Temple, Florida Atlantic, Florida International. Help me out, guys. Who would the other two be?
Texas.
No, in our division.
In our division.
Help me out here. South Maybe. Florida.
Yeah.
And probably Memphis would be the seventh team. It'd be Memphis or UAB, because the Navy's going to want to be in the West because of the private schools and because of recruiting taxes.
But right now you have one bus trip.
Yeah, Charlotte.
First day in the Sun Belt, you have at least six.
Correct. No, I'm with you. I would do it tomorrow. I understand why we're not, because of the television revenue at this point, but I would do it tomorrow. I think I do think the television revenue is going to go away in the American, and we're going to have a decision to make. And, you know, I've heard rumors, speculation, that there has been some discussions between our athletic director and one Sun Belt AD. You know, that, or maybe two Sun Belt ADs, one of them being the one up at ODU, that keep an eye open, keep a door open, and for the Sun Belt, you know, don't expand until things happen with our TV contract. So, who knows if that's true? I do know that Gilbert and the ODU AD are extremely close, so I kind of believe it.
Yeah, I have no problems, like I said, with that. We'll see how, if that point comes where the contract will be that low, I agree, but we'll see how that plays out. Coach, very excited to see what happens. Do you have a feeling on as far as the football team, or are you confident this year? Coach Mike Houston's doing a great job with the team. Do you feel like we're going back bowling again this year?
You know, I've talked to a bunch of people lately and heard other people's opinion. Had lunch with your boy Meador yesterday. He didn't pay, by the way. But
what? We'll have to. I'm gonna have to text him about that. You don't.
He's not in that expense account anymore. But yeah, I mean, I'm hearing everything from on the upside 9 or 10, on the low side 6, and probably somewhere in the middle is realistic. It's a tough schedule. Tough schedule. But I sure like the direction Coach Houston's headed, and like the staff that he's got. And I sure hope people get excited as we get closer to football and get those tickets and show up in the numbers that they did when Skip was here and when Ruff started and that kind of thing. Because that place was so much fun to be.
Got to do a better job of promoting season tickets. I mean, it's a good home schedule. I think in terms of
a little feline action there, Dave.
I look at the I heard what you just said, Coach, about, you know, anywhere from 6 wins to high side 9-10 wins. It is a tough schedule. NC State's going to have their best team probably since the early Amato days. You know, BYU's preseason top 15 most likely. UCF probably top 25. I'll tell you, sneaky good ODU went to a bowl last year, got 10 starters back on offense, has a hell of a quarterback room.
Great coach.
Yeah, has that black quarterback from UCF that played here, that kind of stepped in for guys, help me out, Bubba, the quarterback from UCF that's from Norfolk that played here when
DJ Mack, Dariel Mack.
Yeah, he's up there. They got a heck of a quarterback room. I do not like that game being the second game of the year at all. I'll tell you why. People aren't going to get fired up when they hear ODU coming in here. But like I said, 10 starters back on offense, heck of a quarterback room, coming off of a bowl game. We're playing NC State the week before. What I do like is they're up and up with Virginia Tech. I hope they beat Virginia Tech. That would be the best thing for us. Sorry, Coach Mack. I think our win-loss total kind of depends a lot. We got some talented receivers out of the transfer portal. I think how fast they kind of equate themselves to the new offense, how fast they work themselves into a new offense for them will kind of determine whether we're a 6-win team or an 8-win team. I think, we got some talent at running back. We got a hell of an offensive line. We got great running backs. We got great tight ends. I like our talent at receiver through the transfer portal. It's just how fast will Winstead and those other receivers get ready and get used to this offense and start clicking with Ehlers. If they can click with him early, I think we could have a really special season. If not, I think it'll be a good season. I think it would have to be a disaster striking, like Holton going down, for us to have a losing season. And quite frankly, as tough as this schedule is and as bad as we've been up until last year, even at 6-6, I'm not going to throw up.
No, and like you talked about with the schedule and ODU, we can't be overlooking anyone. As far as our program went down, and Coach has done a nice job building it, but any opponent you play, you better be ready for them and have your A game.
I just hate that being the second game. I really wish we played Campbell after NC State. I do not like that Old Dominion, because if you upset NC State, are you going to be focused for Old Dominion? If you lose to NC State in the close one, are you going to be focused for Old Dominion? I don't like that game being second after NC State.
Coming up in just a few minutes, he's in the green room, John Kurtz. So we'll talk conference realignment. I know he's a K-State guy, and we're talking Big 12 and finding out. Coach has, I think, made us feel more comfortable now and better than what we were 49 minutes ago. Bubba, I know you had a question for Coach Mack.
Yeah, a program we're obviously very familiar with is Virginia Tech, and that's Coach Mack's alma mater. So, Coach, with the transition there from Coach Fuente to Coach Pry, who had ties back to obviously Bud Foster there as a GA in the mid to late 90s, so, you know,
how are you hearing that transition's going?
You know, it's been a great honeymoon period, and of course the proof will be in the pudding whether he wins games or not. And the roster is fairly depleted, although there's certainly some talent, and they got a little bit of help in the transfer portal, especially at the quarterback position. But he's done everything that folks didn't like about Coach Fuente in terms of, you know, being a Hokie to start with, and growing up in Lexington, Virginia, and having ties to the Beamer days when they were really, really good. And he's hired an interesting staff. He got one of the best offensive line coaches in the country from Wisconsin, a couple pro guys here and there on the offensive side of the ball, Georgia State guy, and talked about them a little bit ago. They've been incredible on offense as maybe a quarterback coach, and kept a couple of Virginia Tech people and brought some Virginia Tech people into the program. And of course, the big thing they've done is what we've been asking for here. They stepped up with even more of a commitment. Not that they weren't doing things, but the staff is much bigger, especially on the recruiting side, and the quality control coaches that are so famous now, thanks to Nick Saban. He's just doing so much. They've already got 15 commitments out of the 23 class, and they're beating some people. I don't see many 4- and 5-star guys, but see a bunch of people that people want, that other folks wanted, that were good programs. So I think everything is pointed in the right direction. But tough opening game. They've got West Virginia early. The league is going to be pretty good. A lot of good quarterbacks back in the ACC or transferring into the ACC. I don't know what a realistic number is, but he's got people excited, and that's fun.
Not to get off on a tangent, but you bring up West Virginia. That's a program that's needing to show some progress under Neil Brown, and very interesting quarterback situation there with JT Daniels coming over from Georgia. So obviously the Mountaineers are needing to show some improvement under Coach Brown.
Yeah, you got Daniels there, and Coach Brown did a great job at Troy, and he's done a little bit different up there. They've been a little better on the defensive side than the offensive side, which is the opposite of what they had going on with Holgorsen. And then you got Slovis at Pittsburgh. You got a lot of returnees too. You know, you got the kid at NC State, and the kid at Boston College, and the kid at UVA, and the kid at Miami. A lot of returnees that are good too. And Clemson's got a returnee, but they've also got one of the top two or three signees in the country at that spot too. So a lot of good quarterback play coming up in the ACC. Great player at Wake Forest. Can't fail to mention him. Going to be an interesting year in the ACC in a lot of different ways.
No doubt about it. And hopefully the commissioner will focus on the league and not where the league offices are. That seems to be more what he's more green for. Oh my God. Greensboro, him and Jim Boeheim. Greensboro, North Carolina is where I was born. I will hold that against, please don't hold that against Greensboro, but maybe you can make an argument to move it out of Greensboro because of where I was born. But I mean, I think it's a great city, and I think there's more important things to worry about with your league than where the league offices are. But Coach, thank you so much for coming on. I know we always go over time. You're gracious with us each time, and appreciate you so much.
Hey, who you got in the race today, Coach? Who's winning the race? I have no idea who that is.
Kevin Harvick.
You're Harvick guy. Gotcha. All right.
My guy is not doing well, but by golly, I'm going to pick him till he wins.
Sounds there good you
to
go.
Me. Hey, one more NASCAR question, man. I know you love NASCAR. Then we'll wrap this up and move on to our next guest. The street course in Chicago, it sounds like it's going to be like a legitimate street. What is up with that? Is that a street course they're running, or are they going to rope off part of the Chicago streets? I didn't quite understand that story.
It'll be a street course, and it's another dadgum gimmick. They're having too many gimmicks. And I don't mean to be the get off my lawn guy, but that isn't how NASCAR got popular, is doing gimmicks. Exactly. And we don't need any more gimmicks. That will be one.
Yeah, what we need is to try to get the Southern fan base back in the Carolinas, Virginia, Georgia, Tennessee, et cetera. And having a street course race in Chicago ain't going to do it. you can't grow your sport by alienating your core fan base. And, you know, they shut down Rockingham. They shut down North Wilkesboro. Now I'm getting on Kendrick.
But they're actually bringing those. They're going to bring those back. Maybe not at the top level, the cup level, but
They ain't going to bring it back at the cup level, and then they ain't bringing it back worth a shit. Because
we've come full circle. We're back to the Pirate Club now. You can't forget your bait.
Exactly.
Coach, thank you so much. And by the way, I'll make sure Meador pays next time for lunch, okay?
Thank you, guys.
All right. Have a good one, little friend. Take care. Always love having Coach on. He is a lot of fun, and we appreciate him. And now a guest that we had on last year, and we're bringing him back. Bubba, I tell you what, it's hard to believe, but it's not been a year ago. And we had this guest on talking about what it would be like to have with Big 12. Will there be life after the Big 12? Would it still survive? And the Big 12 is looking like it's okay.
Yeah, no doubt, Dave. Business has been good for this guy lately with all the conference expansion talk, but does an excellent job with his YouTube channel, like we said, focused on the Big 12. But welcome back into the show, John Kurtz. John, we appreciate your time this afternoon.
Hey, no problem, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
We wanted to have you on. Obviously, last year was, such a huge surprise with Texas and Oklahoma leaving, going to SEC. And now this year with the Pac-12 with USC and UCLA leaving the Pac-12, going to the Big Ten. Looks like that you guys are going to be okay and maybe expansion. What are you hearing as far as – I know this story is so fluid. It changes literally by the second.
Yeah, it's been a lot to digest. You're seeing a lot of reporting, I think, on both sides. I mean, it kind of depends on if you're poking around in Pac-12 circles or more in Big 12 circles. Obviously, the two dynamics at play right now are can the Big 12 pull off the – four corner schools, first of all, in the Pac-12, which would be Utah, Arizona, Arizona State, and Colorado. And then the Pac-12 discussion has been trying to link up with the ACC for what they're deeming a loose partnership that really would be like the ACC network taking over for the Pac-12 network and distributing some games over there, with the idea being that would beef up the Pac-12's upcoming TV deal and the ACC's TV deal, which, you know, as I'm sure you guys know, is kind of a mess with everybody locked up for 14 years. In the mid-30s in terms of a payout per year. So it depends who you read as far as how legitimate that is, how much it might actually add to the TV contract, how much value there actually is in that. I seem to doubt how much value there really would be in that, but it seems to be the Pac-12's path to survival right now, if they could also get Oregon and Washington to agree to something long-term, which is another very interesting part of all this. But it just varying degrees of validity on or confidence, I guess I should say, on how well the Big 12 will do in trying to poach the Pac-12 there. I'm not sure that they're going to get rich doing that by pulling those four schools in, but I think it's a matter of survival and just eat or be eaten, basically. And if you can kill another conference, you're one step closer to being that second tier of college football when it's all said and done, because I think we all recognize it'll be the SEC 10, number one and number two. Or 1A, 1B, really, in college football when it's all said and done. So, yeah, I think in Big 12 country, there's a lot of cautious optimism that that'll happen, but I don't think it's a certainty either. And anytime, honestly, you know, being an alum and a fan of a school like Kansas State, I mean, anytime this stuff gets back into the atmosphere in college football, I think you get a little bit uneasy about what could happen. So I think cautious optimism is really the word in the Big 12 right now, for the phrase in the Big 12 about where things sit.
John, if the Big 12 is able to poach Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, and Colorado from the Pac-12, and you mentioned Oregon and Washington, you know, they obviously want the Big 10. If the Big 12 is able to take those four, and Oregon and Washington does not see an immediate path to the Big Ten, do you see them staying in the Pac-12 at that point and expanding with poaching from the Mountain West? Or do you see them at that point also wanting to join the Big 12? Oregon and Washington, I'm speaking of.
Yeah, I think there's a path to it, and it's weird. I mean, Oregon and Washington are in a weird spot where it would almost be like a rental. You know, I mean, they could be there for a couple of years in the Big 12 before they get the invite to whether it's going to be the Big Ten or the SEC at the end of the day. Because I do think they'll make the cut, but right now they're a tweener. The Big Ten and the SEC have gotten too big basically now, where, you know, they're too powerful. And if you're going to add enough value monetarily to increase the revenue share for all the schools, when you have to cut the pie another slice out of it, if you're a school being added, that's a really difficult bar to clear. And so, you know, I was just reading like Oregon could be close to around 60, but they would need it to be north of 100 in terms of value to make it work for the Big Ten right now. And so there'd been talk of like, can Phil Knight finance this thing, you know, which is pretty crazy to be talking about that. But that's kind of where we sit right now. So basically, Oregon and Washington are in no man's land. And if those four schools do leave, it would put a lot of pressure on them, I think, to join the Big 12 or perhaps the ACC. But the problem that the ACC has is that then if they're opening things back up to renegotiate a new TV contract and then the 14 years goes away, well, then I'm sure you'll see schools jump into the SEC and or Big 10 in pretty short order when that happens. So that's the scenario where it could play out, where Oregon and Washington have to come to the Big 12 for a couple of years because the Pac-12 dissolves, the ACC can't take them. And they're really kind of stuck without a home. And I don't think that they would stick around in anything where you would poach San Diego State, Boise, whoever it might be, because I just don't think you'd be making enough money at all. I think there'd be a lot more money in the Big 12 for them for a couple of years. But with the Big 12, I think you'd be knowing like, hey, this is going to be a short-term thing. It would still be a heck of a win PR wise, if nothing else for the Big 12 in the short term. So that'll be a really interesting one to see how it plays out, because it does not sound like they're going to get in the Big Ten this year. The Big Ten staying put, and Notre Dame is going to stay put for right now.
And then you'd have Oregon State, Washington State, Cal, and Stanford. You know, those four left. You know, that four, does the Pac-12 still survive? Do they then poach from the Mountain West? So those four joined the Mountain West. Does the American come into play? This whole thing could be interesting. How soon do you see something happening with the Big 12 and the Pac-12?
Sounds like right now it feels like we're operating on like a timeline of weeks, perhaps. I know a part of it, the Pac-12 is in a 30-day exclusive TV negotiating window, which could affect some of this. I think the Pac-12 right now is kind of in a standoff with everybody trying to look around and figure out how committed are Oregon and Washington actually to this. How much can they trust that they would be committed to that? It just kind of depends on who you read and who you believe as far as how close those four corner schools would be to budging. I do think Arizona, it sounds like, is the most likely and the most into it, the most into.
Yeah. I got an inside scoop for you here, and I'm, as long as I don't reveal the source, I guess it's okay. I know somebody that's relatively close to the San Diego State program, and I will not reveal the source, and that they reached out to Arizona, and Arizona reached out to the Big 12 and said, hey, look, San Diego State will come with us today. Arizona is ready. You're right. And apparently there was a reach out from them to San Diego State about, you know, hey, how about just taking us to? We'll come. We'll give you the San Diego market. And then maybe the other big Pac-12 schools will come later. Have you heard that?
It makes sense. I've not heard it specifically about San Diego State, but I know, you know, a lot of those around the Arizona program right now have been not very shy about saying, like, Arizona is ready to do this. The rest of the four corners may. Yeah, and my stance as somebody in Big 12 country would be I would be very interested in listening to that, because I just think you take whoever you can and start plucking away at the Pac-12 and put the pressure on everybody else, because the second one man jumps, it's going to start.
And that also takes away from somebody else that the Pac-12 couldn't add. San Diego State would be their top target outside of the Big 12. So if you take Arizona, San Diego State, not only are you taking a Pac-12 school, you're taking away a replacement.
Correct. Yeah. No, definitely see the logic in that. I think San Diego State's the no-brainer, like, next on the list. Even if we're talking Big 12 expansion before any of this had happened, I think they're as attractive as anybody else out there in that landscape. So, yeah, that would make sense. That might knock off a spot for, like, a Utah, but it seems like Utah's probably on the opposite end of the spectrum right now from Arizona in terms of furthest away from making that jump, with Colorado and Arizona State probably somewhere in between.
Now, John – explain to our viewers, you know, about this tremendous hire, or, you know, I guess it remains to be seen, but in my opinion, it's a tremendous hire that the Big 12 has made in terms of its new conference commissioner, Brett Yormark. A very intriguing background.
I loved it. I think it's the type of hire that you need right now, because, frankly, all this is turning much more into the landscape of college athletics is turning much more into, like, professional sports / entertainment at the highest levels than anything else. And that's where this guy has thrived. Obviously, most recently with Roc Nation, Jay-Z's label, and has worked with a lot of entertainers in that space. But before that, you know, I mean, I heard you guys talking about NASCAR just a second ago. He worked with NASCAR to engineer the deal with Nextel, which was at the time the largest deal in North American sports history when he got that signed for them. He also moved the Nets from New Jersey to Brooklyn. So he's been a guy that's accomplished some really big things in the entertainment and sports space. And I think that's the kind of thinking that you need right now as a guy that's your commissioner. Now he's getting a heck of a test right away to jump right into this. He wasn't supposed to start until August 1st, but the UCLA-USC announcement came 24 hours after his hire was announced. So he's off and running, I'm sure, right now. But he's been a guy throughout his career that's been very aggressive and has a lot of connections. I mean, quoted in the press release that the Big 12 put out there about him being hired was the head of Fox Sports. So when you're talking about TV negotiations, I'd say that's probably not a bad thing if that guy was willing to give a quote in the press release. So was Adam Silver, by the way, the NBA commissioner. So he has connections in pretty high places. And right now it does seem like it'll be kind of him versus George Kliavkov, who's another outside hire who came from the entertainment world in Las Vegas. And those two guys are kind of working the phones right now, trying to see who can outduel each other for the survival of their leagues.
John, what about the case we were talking to him earlier about West Virginia? West Virginia obviously had wanted to go to the ACC. Do you see them defecting at some point? I know we talked about it all depends on that ironclad, or we think could be at this point the ironclad grant of rights. But is that a school that you could see leaving a Big 12?
Yeah, I suppose so. I, you know, some of the ACC stuff I'm probably not as well versed in as I should be. But, you know, I mean, my understanding was if they were to add schools, it does change that deal. And so that's a huge risk because you've got North Carolina, Virginia, Florida State, Clemson, Miami, all just sitting there chomping at the bit, waiting to leave and get into the Big Ten or the SEC. But if there is a path there, if there is a way to do it, West Virginia, I understand why it would make some sense. I certainly understand why West Virginia fans would want that to an extent, because they've just sort of been a school on an island in the Big 12 and have lost a lot of the regional rivalries, which is what, you know, really, really drives the sport, drives football. So I get it. I do get it from their standpoint. Little different case than like a Kansas, which has always been feeling like they're too good for the Big 12 and wanting to get to the Big 10. There's been a lot of that.
They ain't too good for the MAC in football.
Yeah, no, well, they're not. They're not, but they certainly think the basketball program and the AAU status carries enough weight for the Big Ten. But then that's been a harsh reality, I think, doled out as far as that goes. West Virginia, I understand more the yearning for the ACC. So probably possible. I mean, I'm certainly not discounting the possibility of it, but I just don't know. I don't know the logistics of how the ACC would pull that off right now.
Now, John, I got a scenario and a fix for West Virginia and the Big 12, and you know, so on and so forth. So here's the scenario. You got UCF, Cincinnati coming in, which kind of helps West Virginia's situation a little bit. You bring in the four corner schools. That puts the Big 12 at a 16 schools. Now, hear me out. You need to equal things out. We need to go to 18 for the Big 12, and you need two East Coast schools to make things more equal. What if you bring in Memphis and East Carolina? You eat now. Use creative thinking with your new commissioner. North Carolina is the 10th most populous state in America. East Carolina is the third largest university in the state. We got a huge alumni base. There's some outside the box thinking. You get one East Coast program with East Carolina, Memphis close enough. And now you bolstered your East. We've got history and rivalry with Cincinnati and UCF from being even Houston from being in the same conference. And now you got two distinct 9 East and West team divisions, 18. What do you think? I think it could work.
Well, I definitely know about North Carolina's population base, and I think that's a lot of what, at least a big piece of what drives, you know, the interest in North Carolina, UNC, you know, to the Big Ten or the SEC. And Memphis, I think, was, you know, right on the outside looking in as far as the Big 12's last round of realignment, and they pumped now, they unveiled, I'm trying to remember what the dollar figure was, but they unveiled a big facility upgrade plan for the Liberty Bowl, which is much needed, frankly, but they needed to do that if they were going to take that next step. I think the issue there would be, if I'm the Big 12, I think I'm looking around saying like, well, the ACC is clearly, I don't know if panicking is the right word, but certainly not very comfortable right now about what's going on. And, you know, the whispers that I've seen over the last week have been moving towards this attitude of like, hey, these schools in the ACC are like, whatever, we'll figure it out in court. Like, we'll leave and figure it out in court, whatever's going to happen. I know Josh Payton is one from 24/7 Sports who referenced a source that had told him that. So I think the Big 12 would look at it and say, well, let's just wait until the ACC implodes and then pick off, you know, whoever it is that's going to be left. I know, for instance, like Louisville was almost added to the Big 12 10 years ago when West Virginia and TCU were coming into the league. And a lot of people thought they should have done that instead of what wound up happening. So I think the Big 12 sites would probably be set more that route. But, I mean, look, in the world of conference realignment, I really don't discount anything. Because it feels like anything can happen and anything is on the table here.
I feel like we're Rodney Dangerfield with East Carolina. We don't get any respect. And I realize with the football program, but.
Well, we've got that to ourselves, Dave. You know, I think our window to shine was back in the Big East days. And, you know, we did get into the American, the Big East, which was the Big East became the American. We got in last minute. And, unfortunately, because of poor decisions by past administration, and so far, not enough foresight from current administration. I think we've kind of done a little bit of this to ourselves. And we can't do anything about the media market. You know, if Kansas State, no offense to Kansas State and Manhattan, Kansas, if they weren't, you know, in the Big 8 and then got in the Big 12, if they were in a Group of Five conference, they would have no chance of moving up because media market. But thankfully for Kansas State, they were, you know, in the Big 8 and then got in the Big 12. And, you know, that's one problem with East Carolina, something we're always going to face. Despite being in a very popular state, we are in one of the more least populated areas of the state. And, you know, 102nd ranked media market, and you can't do anything about that. Unfortunately, we can't move the University to Charlotte. If ECU was in Charlotte, we'd be in a Power 5 conference.
Oh, there's no question about it. But if you look at Eastern North Carolina, east of 985, we have – over a million people, 1.2.
Oh, I know that.
I mean, I'm not going to go through the deep in the weeds with John because we had him on about Big 12 and realignment. But, John, another thing that I've been hearing is that all this is predicated on Notre Dame. If Notre Dame could sit out as long as they can, we might be playing a waiting game for a long, long time. If people, what I'm trying to say, like the Oregons of the world, the Washingtons of the world, if they want to get in the Big Ten, they're going to have a waiting game because I just don't see Notre Dame until they're told, as we were saying earlier in the show, until they're told you're not going to make the playoff if you're independent. That's the only way they join a conference and most likely the Big Ten.
That's exactly it. And I think this is where, you know, the SEC and Greg Sankey are pretty wise here. And most of the playoff discussions that were going on, which, you know, seemed to be basically killed by Jim Phillips by the way of the ACC, which I'm not sure that looks real intelligent right now, because I don't think there's any way the SEC and the Big Ten ever agree to anything with an auto bid for a conference champion ever again. But when all that's going on, I mean, the SEC was very, very much in lockstep with Notre Dame in making sure that they would have a spot at the table for the playoff, because the second that gets shut off, well, Notre Dame's probably going to join the Big Ten. So that is bad business for the SEC. So Notre Dame has an ally in the SEC and Greg Sankey right now in making sure that they continue to have access to whatever the next iteration of the playoff is going to be. And that's going to keep, I think, any decision really from being made, because Notre Dame definitely doesn't want to do that. They definitely value their independent status. They definitely value being unique in that regard. They're now starting to recruit at a higher level with Marcus Freeman already anyway, which, you know, that seemed to be a lot of the complaint for a while. Like they couldn't quite recruit at the level that they needed to compete with the big boys because of some of the academic requirements and some of the things that make Notre Dame Notre Dame. But it seems like Freeman may be able to elevate them a little bit there. So, yeah, I don't think they're in any rush to do that. And so it'll depend on, like, does the Big Ten or the SEC just get antsy to try and take that next wave of schools? Like, maybe if those ACC schools do make a jump to the SEC, then the Big Ten decides, well, we'll go ahead and take Washington and Oregon right now as a responding. Not going to totally financially make sense right now. I think those could be the next dominoes to fall. But yeah, I don't expect anything out of Notre Dame anytime soon at all. I think a lot of dynamics would have to change quite a bit.
John, here's the thing that I've kind of questioned about this whole thing about waiting on Notre Dame. If everybody seems to believe the goal, and, you know, who knows if it's true or not, but the goal is to get to 20 or 24 for the Big Ten and the SEC. The Big Ten's at 16 right now, correct? So with that of USC, UCLA. So if they go to 18, there's still room for Notre Dame later. I don't understand what the holdup is. If take Washington and Washington State. You know, is the holdup that they want to go east? Do they want Notre Dame? You know, maybe I've heard Notre Dame, Stanford, North Carolina, Duke, North Carolina, Virginia. Do you think the holdup is not only Notre Dame, but there's some thoughts from the Big Ten that they want to add some from the east to pair along with Maryland, Penn State, and Rutgers? Or do you – because it doesn't make any sense to me. The goal isn't to go to 18. It's to go to 20. So you can add two, and there's still room for Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think a lot of it goes back to right now. I mean, look, they would add Notre Dame anytime. I think that's – the Big Ten is ready and waiting to add Notre Dame whenever Notre Dame would want to make that jump. It's just, again, the dynamics of what would actually make Notre Dame make that jump, and it would be not having access to the playoff, or somehow if they're getting so far behind monetarily, and I don't know how the finances of that work with the NBC TV contract with Notre Dame. I'm actually not 100% sure what their payout is, but if they started to get too far behind in TV revenue, maybe that would have them make the jump either, but right now they don't really have a need to. And then as far as everybody else, the Big Ten is already, you know, I mean, the whole situation with Washington and Oregon is you're not adding enough value to make it worth our while to pull you in and then have to split the cut of the money in an extra two ways. And so just there's nobody out there. Notre Dame is really like the one school out there that would potentially add that. I guess I haven't seen the numbers on, you know, a lot of people will tell you North Carolina actually would be next in line in terms of what could be the most valuable to pull from anybody else, but I just highly doubt if Washington and Oregon aren't getting that done. I have a hard time seeing anybody else out there in the landscape getting that done. So for right now, with the Big Ten about to sign a new contract, that's another part of this. You know, it was supposed to be released in May that they would sign this $1 billion contract with Fox that was going to push the payouts north of $100 million for every school.
Good job.
We now know why that got pushed back, obviously, because of the UCLA thing. But they're still going to sign that. There's some whispers it may happen, or they may have an announcement for it by the time they hit their media days, which I know the Big 12s is this week coming up. So Big 10 has to be pretty soon. So I'd imagine you're going to see that pretty soon, that they'll have a new TV deal and a grant of rights signed, and that will at least kind of lock them in for right now. And then just wait on, hey, if Notre Dame wants to jump, we'll take Notre Dame and then maybe find somebody else to add. But maybe that's Oregon's in, is if they feel like they need to add somebody else with Notre Dame. But I think that's really the scenario there right now with the Big Ten.
Does Bill Knight and those Nike uniforms that a lot of these teams are wearing, I just don't see how he can't get something done. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. I just think of that aspect of it, Nike, and it's friggin' Nike.
Well, I mean, there have been talk that I think it was Dennis Dodd just wrote an article for CBS Sports about Phil Knight working the phones a bunch. I know there have been talk about him, like, hey, if Oregon's not going to add, you know, if you guys need an extra $20 million a year to make the addition of Oregon equal monetarily for every school, like, hey, I would pay that. But then it's like, how do you, I don't know, does he have to pay the entire thing up front for the lifetime of the
team? Well, can't he just, you know, give every Big Ten school and Nike contract with more money to make the difference up? I mean, that would seem to be the easiest logical way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, possibly. I'm sure those are the kinds of things that are being discussed right now. I think the problem for Oregon is just they don't really have any leverage. I mean, the Big Ten is about to, again, sign a contract that was supposed to be $1 billion before USC and UCLA, and now it's going to be even more. They're going to be making more money than the SEC per school on a payout basis, even with Texas and Oklahoma. So the Big Ten's just not really in a rush. They don't really have to do anything, and they know that Oregon will be waiting. Even if Oregon has to go join the Big 12 for a couple of years, they know Oregon will be sitting there ready and waiting whenever they need them. So, yes, I know everybody talks about, like, eventually this is going to get to two leagues of 20 to 24 teams or whatever, but that doesn't mean that it has to be a race to do it now just for the sake of doing it. And I think from a financial standpoint, the Big Ten's just in a great spot where they don't really need to do much. And I think they're kind of kicking their feet up right now, leaving Oregon and Washington really in the lurch.
Do you see any way that the Big 12 gets poached from the Pac-12 if Oregon and Washington commit and they get the four corner schools to stay put? Do you see any way at this point that is there an Oklahoma State, for example, that would, is anybody interested in saying, yeah, we want out of here? You know, this time last year, it would have been a no-brainer. Yeah, let's go to the Pac-12. It's funny how things have changed so much in a year.
Yeah, you know, I think there is a possibility of that happening. I think the scenario is, and there has been a little bit of concern in the football country with this. I think it would be, you know, I mean, ESPN is involved in behind the scenes with the loose partnership between the ACC and the Pac-12, because it would be about the ACC network, which is controlled by ESPN. And if you remember last summer, Bob Boolsby came out very sternly and accused ESPN of basically trying to blow apart the Big 12 so they could get out of that TV contract, and would have made a lot of financial sense for ESPN. So I think the theory would be, if ESPN feels like this is the time where they could strike and get the Pac-12 to stay together, link them up with the ACC, which again, a couple of that they own, and then have, you know, the top 4, 5, 6, whatever your number wants to be, Big 12 schools go out and join the Pac-12 and then put them all together in that. And you've kind of already got more or less a conference of the best of the rest together, and you're sort of streamlining that process. Well, if you're in Stillwater, Oklahoma, if you're in Lubbock, Texas, if you're in Lawrence, Kansas, and you're a part of that group, you can kind of sell to your fan base, hey, we won this round of realignment, right? We got chosen to go be with the best of the rest. I think that's a scenario where it could happen, and I think that's something that me as a Kansas State fan would be concerned about. I don't know how likely it actually is, because, again, it doesn't seem like the ACC is all that thrilled with this partnership right now, at least just depending on some of the reporting that you're reading. But once again, it's realignment. Everything's on the table, and a lot of this reporting, I don't know who exactly really knows what, because the two most important things that have happened in realignment in the last year, Texas and Oklahoma, USC, UCLA, there was not a single before that actually happened. I mean, we got the reports out of nowhere, completely out of the blue, no leaks before that. They kept that all airtight. And so I think the real decision makers and the stuff that's really happening very high up, it's proven they keep that pretty, pretty locked in. So I have to doubt that we get all the leaks of that information. So long way to answer that question. But yes, I do think it's possible that could happen.
Now, John, we certainly appreciate your time this afternoon. Before we let you go, take a look at what's going to be happening this fall on the field. A lot of intriguing storylines around the league. You have the job that Coach Aranda has done at Baylor. And then at Oklahoma, you obviously have a new head coach in Brent Venables. You have the story at Texas with the quarterback situation, with Quinn Ewers transferring in from Ohio State, and so much promise there coming back to his home state. So, what are your takes on some of the things around the league, some of those storylines?
Yeah, we just got the All Big 12, the preseason All Big 12 team, and the preseason All Big 12 poll this past week, which was interesting because for the first time in 6 years, Oklahoma was not the preseason pick to win the league. It was Baylor. It was close, but Baylor was 1, Oklahoma was 2. And I think that is a nod of respect to Dave Aranda and just the Baylor program in general, because 3 times they've been to either won a Big 12 championship or been to the Big 12 title game in the last decade under 3 different coaches. So that's proven to be a program with a lot of staying power. And Baylor's had a phenomenal run with their athletic department as a whole, with a basketball national championship mixed in there too here within the last couple of years. So I understand Baylor has lost a good chunk of the squad from last year. They have a new quarterback this year, but I do think he has a higher upside. So there's a lot of projecting there, but I think the fact that they're at number one underscores just how open the league is. It's pretty wide open. Texas, has certainly as much offensive skill talent as basically anybody in the country. But Texas has had a heck of a time actually putting any of that together. I mean, Tom Herman had 3 straight top 5 recruiting classes, and we saw how that worked out for him. So it's a matter of Texas actually putting that out there together and making it work, which we have not seen yet. And friendly reminder, they did go 5-7 last year. So, Oklahoma State, another pretty solid team that's up there in the top 4. They're just rock solid every year. But can Mike Gundy get a team led by Spencer Sanders, still pretty enigmatic as a quarterback, to actually jump up and win the league, I think is another question. And then, hey, I mean, K-State, there's been a lot of talk about K-State being a dark horse to win the league. And they had the most first-team All-Big 12 selections of anybody in 6. On that list. Then we're picked 5th, but it is fairly close, some of that voting up there at the top. So that's another team to watch out for, I would say, this year. So yeah, there's a lot of very interesting storylines at play there. I for one am not as high on Brent Venables as Oklahoma fans would be, for instance, and not as high on Dylan Gabriel at quarterback as Caleb Williams. But we'll see. Dylan Gabriel was picked as the newcomer of the year in the league. So yeah, there's a ton going on and everybody wanted to get last shots in, so to speak, at Oklahoma and Texas. I'm sure they'll face really difficult road environments throughout the season once again. But yeah, it'll be a really interesting year on the field, which is something that gets extremely overshadowed by everything else actually happening off the field.
Head out, John, before we let you go, I know you do a great job on YouTube, but how can people subscribe there and follow you on Twitter?
Yeah. It's just John Kurtz, JohnKurtz on YouTube. Got a really good subscription base of around 13,000 Big 12 fans right now. So great community. Go live on Wednesdays and Sundays and sprinkle in some content throughout the week as well. And then if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at JohnKurtz, JohnKurtz on Twitter. And K-State specific content, I do a podcast with a couple guys as well on the Kansas City Sports Network, just called 3MAW, if you want K-State specific content as well.
All right, John, thanks for a Sunday afternoon visit. Appreciate you so much, and we'll talk to you again. Maybe we can get you back during the season of football, mid-season, if you will, and see how things are going.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. Take care, guys.
All right, see you. Thanks, John. Appreciate it so much. All right, appreciate our guests, Coach Mack and John Kurtz. Great show, guys, this afternoon for Sunday. Do you guys have anything before we wrap things up?
Yeah, Dave. PGX Gloves, really appreciate their support of the show. Big shout out to Mark Minicazzi. Really appreciate his support, as I said, but pgxgloves.com. They have custom baseball gloves, custom batting gloves, football gloves, swag apparel, you know, be it hoodies, t-shirts, long sleeve tees, and a lot of sharp looking stuff. So go to pgxgloves.com to check it out and use promo code ECU for 25% off your order. Really appreciate their support of the program.
No doubt. In fact, my son, Alexander, my daughter, Mackenzie, they both have gloves made by Mark. They're at PGX Gloves, and they do a great job. And they can customize where they can put your son or daughter's name on there, or maybe your name if you're playing. For sure, it's a lot of fun. And I know Kyle likes to mention, too, about if you're a golfer. I know they make golf gloves as well, so that'll be a lot of fun. All right, appreciate Mark and everybody at pgxgloves.com for their support of the program. All right, we're going to get out of here. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend. We'll be back in a few days. Until next time, you've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective. Good day, everybody. Go Pirates. My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my soul. And I don't back down, not at all. Find out when the cannons explode. From the sidelines down to the post. Put it down like not even close. All out to my last whistle blow. From the flag with the soul and crossbones. Everybody stand up, get your hands up. Now the team knows that we got their back.